Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Back on Monday Night Talk, and I'm still not Kevin Tachi. I'm still Christine James. And this is part two of our political forum tonight. It is the Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat. And please excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold, so I might be doing some coughing. We were just getting ready with the three candidates here to choose their opening and closing order. We're going to do that in just a minute. I'm just shuffling these around like I'm a card shark, except they're little pieces of paper in the official WATD newsroom koozie. Joining me to ask questions, we've got Kevin Tachi, of course, the host of Monday Night Talk, and another reporter from The Ledger. We've got Jessica Trufant here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Whitman Hansen, Cable Access, as well. And we've got the three candidates here as well. We've got Patrick O'Connor. He's a Republican incumbent. We've got Stephen Gill. He is the independent in this race. And Katie McBride, who is the Democratic candidate in this race. So before we get started with the rules and regs, let's choose opening order. Do you love this? All handwritten, so we know we have three. So it will begin. We will begin with Stephen Gill, and then we switch this order in the back. Then we are going to go to Katie McBride, be two. And then, of course, we are going to go to Pat O'Connor, will be three. And then we reverse these orders at the end. And again, for those of you who missed it, just to make sure that we keep these three candidates true here to the timing, we've got our own Amy Leonard. See the paper over there? Construction paper, green, red, and yellow. Green is go, red is stop, yellow is you have 10 seconds. And then if you keep talking on red, you get the 5-second grace period, and if you keep talking, you get the bell. I know, Kevin loves that when I use the bell. Be hard, after this, the two Republicans that ran for the state attorney general, they took the cake during primary elections, because I think it was like every other question, we were going on the bell. So it's good to have spirited debate. Now, if you're not sure that the Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat is your town. There's a lot of towns that it is comprised of: Weymouth, Scituate, Norwell, Marshfield, Hingham, Hull, Duxbury, and Cohasset. And we stick with the same format that we use for every single forum: opening statements from our candidates, no longer than 2 minutes, a round of questions from reporters, and we try to ask you to keep your answers to 1 minute. And then we go to a lightning round, and lightning really means lightning. It means quick and fast and to the point. Yes or no is your answer, or one or two sentences. And and then with your closing statement, that is down to 1 minute. And we will go till 8 o'clock here tonight. So unless there's any other questions, concerns, or comments, we'll get started, and we'll get started with our opening statements. Let's begin now with the independent candidate in this race, and that is Stephen Gill. Good evening.
Good evening. Hi, Christine, Kevin, Jessica. Thank you for inviting me, Pat and Katie, to participate in this WATD's Candidates Forum for the Plymouth and Norfolk District State Senate seat. My name is Stephen Gill. I am a father, a veteran, and an attorney. I am the independent candidate for State Senate. 55% of Massachusetts registered voters are independent, which means I am like most voters. The problem that we've seen over the years is every time we go to the voting booth, we only have a choice between a Democrat or a Republican. We hardly ever see an independent candidate on the ballot. In Massachusetts, 80 to 90% of the races are uncontested. And since the Democratic Party heavily controls the legislature in this state, chances are if you go to the voting booth, there's only going to be one candidate on that ballot, and it's going to be a Democrat. We've seen in recent years the problems that the two-party system has created in this country. The Democrats and Republicans are fighting each other like cats and dogs, and nothing seems to get done. As an independent state candidate, I will have the benefit of being able to work with both parties, because I will not be their mortal enemy. The Democrats and the Republicans seem to manufacture problems and do nothing but battle each other. We've seen this at the national level, and it's very disturbing, this tribal political environment that we're in. You'll have a chance to vote against that this election on November 6th by choosing me as your state senator and the independent candidate for state senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Stephen Gill, who's the independent candidate in this race. Now let's go to Katie McBride. She's running as a Democrat.
Hi, I'm Katie McBride, and I'm running for state senate. I'm a pediatrician, wife, and mom of two kids. I've long been actively involved in the community. I'm a member of the Hingham Democratic Town Committee and an appointed member of the Massport Community Action Committee. I've given numerous free educational talks at the hospital and library. I started a Saturday science program with my friend to introduce children to the amazing accomplishments of women in science. Educating and giving to the community are passions for me. I've been endorsed by outstanding, influential people like today, President Obama, Governor Dukakis, and Gina McCarthy, who is the former administrator of the EPA. I've also been endorsed by amazing groups and unions like Planned Parenthood and MassCop, which is the largest law enforcement union in Massachusetts. I am humbled to receive the support of so many people. I love being a pediatrician. I get to help families every day. I am honored to be able to listen to their concerns and help solve their problems. But our healthcare system is a mess, and it is rapidly worsening. Copays and deductibles keep going up. Families and businesses are struggling with this financial burden. 8 years ago, I gave birth to my son. It was a happy and overwhelming experience. We soon discovered that he failed his hearing tests. I found myself looking at healthcare from a different perspective. I am experiencing the struggles with healthcare from the inside as a mom of a patient and the outside as a physician arguing for the care of my families. When my son turned 5 years old, we got him ready to go to kindergarten, and we filled out a mountain of paperwork to enroll him in public school. We were so excited. The school knew going in that he had hearing loss, but it still took about a year and a half to get him the equipment he needed to better hear in the classroom. Unfortunately, my story is not unique. We need to fix our educational funding. Children are our future, and we should be investing in them. I not only hear your concerns, but I share them. There hasn't been a physician in the state senate since 1936. I think it's about time we had another.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Katie McBride, the Democrat in this race. And now we're going to go to Pat O'Connor, Republican incumbent in the state Senate seat.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you to WATD for hosting this political forum tonight. My name is Patrick O'Connor, and for the past 2.5 years, I've had the honor and privilege of serving you as your state senator. Together, in my opinion, we've made the South Shore and Massachusetts the strongest they have ever been. On the state level, I worked with my colleagues in a bipartisan fashion to grow our economy, turn an $800 million deficit into a $1 billion surplus, create 110,000 jobs, and invest in our children, our veterans, our seniors, our middle class, and our infrastructure. And we've also put in place a compassionate but aggressive campaign to tackle the opioid crisis. Right here in the South Shore, we've seen record level of aid for schools, police, fire, public works, and infrastructure projects such as the Route 3 bridge repair, seawalls, beach nourishment, the Four River Bridge are ongoing or have been completed. I've secured funds for a new school in Weymouth, senior centers, adult disabled housing, libraries, veterans houses, water infrastructure, and for local projects long delayed or underfunded, such as the TIC, which now have a state partner to assist in funding. But most importantly, my office has assisted thousands of constituents by helping them to provide a solution to the problem they are facing. From navigating the Real ID system to helping a family member find a bed for their son or daughters who's struggling with addiction. When people from this district call my office, they know they have someone on the other end of the line ready to listen and ready to work hard for them in their time of need. I ask for your vote on November 6th to continue to work hard for you, to continue to bring progress to the South Shore and the Commonwealth, and to provide you the representation you deserve on Beacon Hill.
Thank you. That was the opening statement from Patrick O'Connor, the incumbent Republican in this Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat. Now we're going to go right to Kevin Tachi. Questions for our candidates.
I'll work my way down the line. We'll start with you, Senator. Why do you feel you deserve a third term in office? If you could give me three essential pieces of legislation or action that you took to secure funding or services for your district, if you could.
Sure. I think that the first example, near and dear, obviously, to everyone here at ATD, is the TIC. We went into a situation where, when I got into office, TIC was drastically underfunded and near, in my opinion, a point in time where they were going to have to shut their doors. And I worked together in a bipartisan fashion with then-Representative Cantwell, Senator Vinny DiMacedo, and was able to secure the funding for this fiscal year and also put in some administrative changes to make sure that that doesn't happen again at the state level. The second would be to increase the local economies, whether it be securing the Hullo trolley through an earmark to basically connect people from the ferry in Hull to Nantasket Beach. What I've been trying to do inside of my time in office has been to grow our local economies, create good-paying permanent jobs here on the South Shore. And the third would be my work with the intellectually and developmentally disabled. During the first part of my time in office, we had an individual who came to us and asked for assistance, which I'll hopefully get into later, and we were able to secure that in the state Senate. So just to continue the work we've been doing.
Okay. Mr. Gill, you've chosen again to run as an independent candidate this year. Your campaign so far has raised very little money compared to the incumbent and the Democratic challenger. So knowing that the odds are long, why do you continue to be in this race?
Well, I don't know how long the odds actually are, but with regard to fundraising, I have made it a point not to do any fundraising. I've had a few people offer me money, and not to insult them, I've taken it. Mm. But as an independent candidate, it is my belief and view that I am here to represent the interests of the people of the district, not special interests. Mm. You know, you talk about one of the things that I am is a fiscal conservative and a social moderate. Now, a lot of people throw around the term fiscal conservative. It's interesting that I was the State House News Service recently cited me as the lowest spender in the entire state. I was named for only spending $10 so far on my campaign. Whereas both Katie and Pat, they both raised something like $50,000 through the parties and other special interest groups, and they managed to spend each of them. Katie spent $24,000. Pat spent $25,000 on a campaign where they had no opponent. If we're talking about fiscal conservatism, that doesn't really show it.
Okay, thank you.
Katie, my question to you is I'll ask the first question. Have you ever been elected or appointed to serve on a board or committee in your community?
Yes, the Massport CAC, which is the Community Action Committee.
And what does that do?
It basically deals with the airport and the noise and the pollution and the concerns that the people have with it.
Okay. Talk to me, if you are able to be elected, how do you feel you're doing in regards to name recognition, getting out there in comparison to someone who's an incumbent?
Yeah, no, going up against an incumbent is very tough. I think we're doing really great. I'm super excited about it. We've been working really hard. We hit the ground running in February when I pulled papers. We've been pretty much nonstop. I'm exhausted. November 7th will be much needed to relax. But we've sent over 20,000 postcards, handwritten. We have an amazing postcard team. We've hit over 5,000 doors. And just today, like I said, I got the endorsement from President Obama. I've been working really hard and talking to as many people as I can and going to hundreds of events. It's pretty much nonstop. And that's what you have to do in order to get out there, right? You have to get in front of the people, because the people is what matters, and the people are who vote, and that's who I want to talk to, that's who I want to be in front of, that's how I want to get the concerns, because when I talk to them, they tell me what their concerns are, and I agree.
Okay. Let's go to Jessica Trufant now from the Patriot Ledger, the questions for our candidates.
So I'll start with a topic that kept me pretty busy last week. The Union Point, the redevelopment of the South Weymouth Naval Air Base, which I don't know if you read the coverage, but they're having some inner turmoil, the development team over there. So, it's been touted as an economic engine for the South Shore, and I'm wondering if there's anything the legislature should do to help the project move forward at this point. I don't know how familiar you are with it, but...
That's right. I was going to reference your article because I thought it was excellent about this. Do you want me to read the first paragraph? Would that help?
Yeah, all right. Sure.
This was from Jessica's article, which I thought was terrific. It said, following a management shakeup, several pending lawsuits, and what he sees as the company's failure to deliver, Weymouth Mayor Robert Hedlund giving the master developer of Union Point no more than 30 days to prove it can successfully carry out the stalled commercial and residential project. So what was the question in regard to that?
So at this point in time, is there anything the legislature should do to step in? I know it's the project currently operates under enabling legislation created by the state. And, with the troubles they're having, is there anything that the state should do, the legislature should do at this point?
Okay, let's start with Patrick.
Sure. First off, I agree with the mayor's 30-day ultimatum to LSTAR. As a person who's worked on this project for 13 years, it's obviously discouraging that once again we have a developer who has made promises that they were going to deliver on and they haven't. What the legislature can do is right now see what happens after this 30-day ultimatum. I think that there's an opportunity for Massachusetts Development Corporation to get involved here at some point in time. We were able to secure $3 million for the town of Weymouth, not for the company, but for the town of Weymouth to assist in the infrastructure build-out. It's still going to need sewer. It's still going to need water, no matter what, no matter who the developer is or what the project becomes. And I think that right now it's a wait-and-see approach to see if they meet this 30-day ultimatum. As a resident of Union Point, a new resident of Union Point, I truly hope that they do. I talk to neighbors on a day-to-day basis, and we need that to be the economic engine for the South Shore, for Weymouth, because it is that missing piece of the puzzle that Weymouth doesn't have. It's the downtown that we don't have, and Weymouth really needs this to be a success. So I'll do everything in my power, legislatively or through the town, to get this done.
Okay. Same question. Let's go to Stephen Gill.
Well, Jessica, I did read your article that came out on the other day. I think it was updated on the 28th on the Ledger. I agree with what Bob Hedlund is doing, giving this these project developers 30 days to get their act together. I don't know if you've really been following it. It's a nightmare over there. There's two lawsuits pending right now, one in Norfolk County, one in Plymouth County. The developers, the individual CEO and other members of the boards are in serious financial trouble. They've been spending money like Paul Manafort. One of them has a $7 million mansion in Cohasset. The other one has bought a luxury booth down at Foxborough Stadium. I don't know if Pat is the right person to be looking to on this issue to decide what to do with these developers and the project, since the Office of Campaign and Political Finance shows that in the last 3 years, Pat has accepted $20,000 from the various members of the board, including these individuals who are in serious financial trouble.
Same question, Katie McBride.
So if I was a state senator, I think the legislature should go and talk to the stakeholders, right? We need to talk with everybody on the project and figure out where the problem lies. 'Cause I'm sure there are multiple problems, but we need to, I need to go down and that's what I would do, is go down and talk with everybody and figure out where the issues are, lay them all out, and see how we can fix all of them. You know, when I talk to people, when I go door to door, really what they're looking for is someone with experience, and the experience that I provide is that's what I do on a daily basis. So I listen to people, and I listen to their concerns, and then I take that information and I, you know, put it up against scientific evidence and studies, because there's always studies going around. You know, I love scientists because they're always thinking about things, and then you solve the problems. And so that's what I would do as legislator.
Okay, I just want to go back to Pat. I want to give you a chance to respond to Stephen Gill's comment about taking money from the developers.
Sure, our campaign has a lot of people that invest in responsible leadership on the South Shore. And when I took office, I was able to vote against the pay raise bill and return $54,000 of my own money. I did that out of principle and character. If this ultimatum's not met by the mayor, or if any criminal charges are filed, I have no problem donating the money that L-Star gave me. And I donated to the South Shore ARC, who L-Star has specifically said that we get $500,000 to over the next 10 years, that do unbelievable day hab program for intellectually and developmentally disabled. So that's where the money would go, and that's what we do.
Okay. I'm going to hear Katie McBride. You said you're a pediatrician.
I am.
Sounds like a wonderful, fulfilling job.
It is.
Why do you want to run for public office? Seriously.
Yeah, no. It
seems like it would be so fulfilling to be a pediatrician, deal with kids, resolve the problems, get to know them. And would you give that job up to be a state senator?
Yeah, no. So it was a very tough decision. You know, one that my husband and I thought about a lot. I've trained a long time to become a physician, and I really do enjoy my little kids and my families, and they're great. But I took an oath when I became a physician to help and heal, and I watch my family struggle. I take phone calls all the time to decide whether they need to come in or not, because copays are so astronomical and it's so expensive to get care that I try to give free care over the phone so that they don't have to come in. And so I can't sit there and watch that. I feel like I'm doing a disservice to what I took an oath to. And so this is a way to help people. This is a way to help more people. And that's what I tell my families. You know, we've had lots of discussions about it, and they wonder what I'm going to do. And I'll tell you, I'm going to go on a leave of absence if I win this. And the reason for it is because I'm an all-in person, and I'm making big claims, and I would like to do the stuff that I am talking about.
Okay. Stephen Gill, you said earlier you raised, what was it, $10 you said?
No. You spent $10? I spent
$10, yeah. What did you
spend the $10
on? I spent $10
on the...
I had to know.
Okay. On the town of Marshfield has a bylaw that, in my opinion, based on my reading of the U.S. Supreme Court cases, runs afoul of the First Amendment, and one of the ways it does is they require you to actually pay a $10 fee in order to put political signs up in the town, which actually amounts to an unlawful tax. It's like a poll tax. They used to do this in the South. They would tax poor people, and by that I mean, you know, African Americans. They would give them a poll tax to keep them from voting, which you can't do because it's one of your fundamental rights under the Constitution. Charging someone even $10 to exercise their right of free speech is an unlawful tax.
Okay. And Pat, something I want to, again, this is the portion of the show where I'm asking individual questions. What is this baby box that you're talking about all the time? I have no idea.
So, very quickly, it's basically a 2-foot by 2.5-foot box with a breathable mattress in it that provides a safe sleeping environment for every single child born in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're able to connect with a social entrepreneur out in California that they provide these baby boxes for free, and we filed legislation as such to basically have some sort of program that's run at a hospital for expecting mothers, expecting families, and provide this box to them. It's filled with shampoo and coupons and information about the WIC program. But our true goal, our overarching goal of the baby box program is to connect families with healthcare professionals and with our healthcare industry that we have in Massachusetts to provide them as much assistance as we possibly can to give that child the best shot at life. And the reason why I filed this was because my mother, who's a NICU nurse, sent a baby home who was going to a good, caring and loving family that they just didn't have the means to provide a safe sleeping environment for that child. And that child suffocated, and that shouldn't happen in Massachusetts, so we filed a bill to prevent that.
And I just want to say, in fairness of full disclosure here, Patrick earlier talked about TIC. That's a talking information center. I've been a volunteer there for 30 years, and I also, at this time, am serving as the chairman of the board of the talking information center. So let's go to Kevin Tachi for our next question.
Thank you, Chairman.
You're welcome, young man. I'm all about the power here.
The drug epidemic remains a top issue here in the Commonwealth and around the country. What do you feel the situation is as to whether it's treatment, education, or assistance to our first responders who need equipment and supplies to treat those who are dealing with the addiction? We'll start with Mr. Gill.
Sure. I guess the most recent information that's coming out now is, with these drugs, they're so toxic that even just coming in physical contact with them can cause you health issues. Also related to, in a recent story, firefighters who are using the respirators that are currently supplied all across the country and the state apparently are giving off some type of toxins, which is causing
cancer, breathing
mm-hmm. problems for firefighters. You know, first responders are the most important government employees that we have, and the state legislature should do everything to make sure that they have the right equipment that is safe to keep them safe so they can keep us safe. And I would support whatever funding it took to get that right.
How young should we go when it comes to educating about addiction? You can either give me an age or give me a grade, Mr. Gill.
Probably as early as I think I remember getting taught about not smoking when I was in elementary school, and we were prepared to listen to that information at that time. I think it was third grade, I think, when we first started learning about that. So I would say third grade, if not sooner.
Okay, Senator, same question in regards to this epidemic. Give me your thoughts in regards to the situation. Do you feel that we're on course to at least see the numbers drop when we're talking about overdose? And are we doing enough when it comes to education and helping our first responders who are dealing with people in crisis?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I did when I became town council president 4 years ago was to create the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Committee in Weymouth. In Weymouth, year to date, we just saw that overdose deaths are down by 90% and overdoses are down 42% from January to September of 17 to January into September of 18. So I think that a compassionate but aggressive approach that encompasses everything, You have to start at the education level. We're never going to arrest our way out of this situation. Education is paramount. Then the second step is making sure that there is treatment beds available to those who are battling this illness. Then that there is assistance for those in the long road to recovery. And at the end, to make sure that we have appropriate sentences for those who are peddling this poison on our street. I think that when you look at the work that the governor has done, whether it be through the CARE Act or the STEP Act, we have seen some dramatic decreases in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts after years of double-digit increases. We're on the right path here. It's far from over, but we are on the right path, and we need to continue to work hard to give those struggling with this illness as much support as we possibly can.
You mentioned the numbers, the data. Any fear that the first set of numbers we're getting are false positives, or that this could be cyclical, where we'll see a series of ups and downs in regards to that data?
I would hope not. The programming that we've put in place in Weymouth and throughout the South Shore and really a large amount of the Commonwealth has been an approach to make sure that we go to that person after the overdose and we provide them with as much resources and support that we possibly can. And in Weymouth, we do this through Officer St. Croix, who goes in a plain clothes with some healthcare professionals and offers these individuals the assistance that sometimes they don't even know is available to them. And so what I think is, we're seeing the result of all of the work of our communities, our community leaders, the CARES program, the Hingham CARES program, all of the certain organizations throughout the South Shore, everyone working together to say that this shouldn't happen, that we need to give everyone the support systems that they need. And when you look at what's happening and look at the numbers, I would hope they're not cyclical. I hope that this is something that continues to decrease and go down. But again, after you see double digit increases for years, and then you see a decrease, and when you see these deaths that are happening in our communities and you see decreases, it's a positive. It's not over, but it's a positive.
Same question, Katie.
Addiction is really difficult to treat. It's a very tough illness. According to the Massachusetts Department of Health, right, January through June of this year, we've had 650 deaths so far in Massachusetts. And the construction and fishing industries are hit the hardest. So in order to solve addiction, it takes a multifactorial approach. First and foremost, we have to decrease the stigma that surrounds addiction. Then we have to incentivize to have more healthcare professionals want to treat it. You know, medical management of opioid addiction is found to be the most helpful way to have people stay in treatment and have people get off addiction eventually. And we need to educate. I'm a big proponent of education. I love education. I think the more that you know, the better off that you are. And when I talk to with people, they really do want to have people who have experience in this, and I do, not only just professionally, but personally. My sister has struggled with drug addiction her whole life, and I've helped her through it.
Give me an age or a grade that you feel is that we should be targeting to give it. And I know you give talks to all ages. So what would be a ripe, it would be a good time, at this time, a good age or a grade to target?
Kids are really remarkable in accepting information from people. I mean, you have to kind of figure out, you know, what age you can tell them. So, I mean, I think you can start educating kids as soon as they hit school in kindergarten. Now, obviously, you're not going to go through the whole litany of things, but you can start with some of the basics. And they're like sponges. They absorb it all. And I think health education is really, really important. Unfortunately, in Massachusetts, interestingly enough, our health education for our students doesn't have to be medically accurate. And I think that's a travesty. So when we're talking about educating our youth, especially on these very important things, I think it's really important to make it scientifically accurate. So when I go to the State House, that's one of the bills that I would really like to push forward, because to me, that really matters.
Okay. Let's go to Jessica Trufant from the Patriot Ledger. Questions for the candidates?
Sure. So obviously sea level rise and more frequent, more intense storms are problems that hit the coastal communities on the South Shore hard each year. There's always talk about rebuilding seawalls and replenishing the beaches and such, but I'm wondering if any of you support maybe more drastic measures, like buyout programs for people on the coast, or whether there should be a time where the government stops helping people rebuild their homes, or because it doesn't seem like, you know, increasing a seawall by a couple feet is ultimately going to be the answer.
Okay, let's start with Katie McBride.
Seawalls are necessary, but it's a short-term solution. Unfortunately, it's a very expensive short-term solution, right? So we do have houses and we do have businesses that are very close to the water, so you do have to provide some protection. I love looking at new information, right? Again, scientists are really innovative. They study these things all the time. There is lots of studies to look at, and we're doing some good programs. So there's a beach nourishment program that's going on in Marshfield and Hull that I think is really interesting, and it helps to, you know, protect our natural barriers. That's what we have to do. That's more of a long-term solution, right? If you protect the natural barriers, that will help protect our artificial houses and stuff that is there. There's a thing called wave attenuation devices, and those are a lot cheaper than building a seawall, whether they're as effective or not. We'd have to look at the studies for it, but that's just another idea to go for that. I think, you know, people are very concerned about this, obviously. We live in a coastal community, and we have to, you know, protect everybody that we can. And it's just, unfortunately, a state of a dysfunction of our state house that we had a really good comprehensive environmental bill that got weakened in the end.
And let's go to Pat O'Connor, same question. Then we'll go to Stephen Gill.
Sure. You know, working in a bipartisan fashion up in the legislature, we were able to secure $10 million during my 2.5 years up there for seawalls at beach nourishment through CZM. Another $6 million is in the works. We went down to D.C. and lobbied for a fairer and more locally based approach to flood insurance, which I believe, hearing some of the news on ATD today in the ride here, there's some progress being made on that. And I actually worked with Joe Rossi and some other folks here in Marshfield to create a commission that was part of the environmental bond bill that became law, signed in by the governor, which looks at ways to lower insurance costs and at the same time plots out a statewide plan for future resiliency. And included in that is to look at every option on the table, including bio programs, including purchasing land for open space, and also zero interest loans to homeowners to rebuild their homes. What I wouldn't want to do is displace anyone without plans in place to make sure that every aspect of this is covered. And in the meantime, we do have to look at wave attenuation devices. We continue to need to invest in our seawalls and coastal infrastructure, and we need to do everything we possibly can for our environment to stop or at least push back on tragic events that continue to happen here on the South Shore.
Okay. Let's go to Stephen Gill.
Thanks. you know, I support a more long-term approach to the solution. You may recall in 2013, Duxbury, Marshfield, and Scituate did a tri-town study on sea level rise in this area. And that report shows that, that was 5 years ago, that report showed that in the next 25 years, we're gonna have 1 foot of sea level rise. Well, 5 years have come and gone. That means we got 20 years left where we're gonna have 1 foot of sea level rise. Now, that means there's gonna be large areas of this district starting to be submerged underwater. While we can spend, you know, billions on seawalls, groins, weirs, other types of revetment devices, and the cheaper ones are these wave attenuation devices. It's not going to solve the problem. You know, water seeks its own level, and it's going to find its way in the end. Once upon a time in my career as an attorney, I did real estate law, and one of the things I learned was the island of Nantucket has a land bank program whereby money is set aside to purchase, buy out people when they go to sell their homes. They get a right of first refusal, and the land can be bought and then left as part of a natural open space.
Thank you. Any other follow-up for that? Okay. I just want to switch topics a little bit here. I live in your district, but I'm not going to tell you which town. to be Norwell. Mysterious. And I hope nobody makes that announcement on the air. But anyway, it was interesting. When I went to get my yearly physical at the health center that I go to, when you fill out those endless questionnaires with a clipboard, one of the questions that said, do you own a gun or does your significant other own a gun? And I thought that was kind of a weird question to ask because I was maybe being skeptical or maybe just being a reporter. I'm thinking, who has, A, do they have the right to ask you that information? B, if you do have a gun, does that mean who's looking at that information? Is it, would it be another doctor? Would it be a nurse? How do I know that somebody looking at that doesn't have a significant other who has a drug problem and might be looking for a gun to steal? Or if you don't have a gun, you're thinking, well, this is a nice address and a nice town. This might be a nice house to rob, and the homeowner doesn't have a gun. I'm not quite sure how I feel about seeing that on there, but do you think that's an invasion of privacy, or do you think that's a legitimate question to ask someone when you're going to get your annual physical? Is it any of their business? Pat O'Connor.
That's a great question. I know that health records are all subject to privacy, but I'm not necessarily sure. I don't know if all healthcare professionals are asking that specific question. I would say that it's up to the individual person to answer that. And I do understand completely where you're coming from, where if that gets into somebody's hands that shouldn't have access to your records, I would say that health records should be of the utmost private care, and I'm not sure if they should be asking the gun issue.
Okay. What about you, Katie McBride? You're a doctor. Do you think that they should be asking that on a question with a physical when you're filling out questions about, you know, blood pressure and, you know, do you have, you know, eczema or whatever, all these questions? Should they be asking questions about that?
Yeah, I mean, so gun safety is public health safety, and it is safety for you, right? Your physician asks you a ton of questions. I will tell you that all the information that you have and that you give to the medical community is private. We have HIPAA to protect that. There's no talking about anything. It's just between you and your healthcare professional, right? So that information is secret or safe, right? But it's very important to be talking about these things. It's, you know, very similar that we'd be asking you, are you having safe sex? Are you wearing your seatbelt? Do you wear a helmet when you're riding a bike? I mean, all of these things are for safety of you. So we know that having a gun in your house, because it's a weapon, can increase risk for you. And so that's the reason for the questioning, is to make sure that it is locked and protected and keeps you safe.
Okay. Stephen Gill, what do you think? Do you think they should be asking a question like that?
Well, I mean, you can ask anybody any question you want. The onus is on the person giving the answer to decide whether or not they want to answer the question or not. You know, we do have the federal HIPAA laws in place, which are supposed to keep your medical records private. However, you know, with the Obama administration passing the Electronic Medical Records Act, and we know the hackers are all over the place trying to get into things, who knows how safe your information really is? Yeah, in theory it's safe, maybe it's not. When I get medical questionnaires put to me that ask me questions that I don't want to answer, for example, they always ask you, put your Social Security number on here. Why do they want your Social Security number? So if your bill isn't paid, they're going to have that to sue you and then possibly garnish your wages, and they need your Social Security number for that information. I always leave that blank. None of their business. If you feel uncomfortable, I understand what Dr. McBride is saying here. The doctor wants to know, maybe are you mentally sound and maybe you shouldn't have access to a gun if you're going to shoot yourself or whatever. Who cares what the reason is? You don't have to answer the question, so don't.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to Kevin Tachi, please.
The state is currently dealing with a sizable revenue surplus from fiscal year 2018. Now, the current administration has some ideas as to where to spend that additional funding. Where would you like to see that money spent, especially in your district? And we will start with the doctor.
Yeah. Hi. So there's a lot of places that I'd love to spend the money. How much do we have? Can we get more? But basically, the places that I would like to spend are the things that I'm most passionate about. Right. So healthcare, because it's a mess. Right. And I think we need to go to a more universal system. And I think that there are, you know, ways that we need to go about and do that. But we need to start moving on that problem. And so because of that, and the opioid epidemic that we have of trying to put mental health back into physical health, and providing all that education, that's going to take money to do that. So that would be one of the big areas that I would like to spend. Second is education. I'm passionate about education. We underfund our education, and the children deserve it. We need to invest in them. And so putting money there is great. And then transportation. Unfortunately, it breaks down all the time, and we need to start investing in it so we can get our workers to where they need to go and our children to school.
Mr. Gill, same question, sir.
Well, I'd like to see a portion of it stay in reserve in a sort of in a rainy day fund type situation. If there is going to be spending of that surplus, I would like to see it put into school safety and education.
Senator, same question, sir.
Yeah, no, I agree with both of my opponents. $72 million the governor has allocated for school safety proposals, including hiring school psychologists, school resource officer training, and grants for technology. I agree with that. I agree with the stabilization fund, and I agree with education. I think that we are underfunding education from ed reform of 1993 to the tunes in healthcare, special education, and as well for our most economically disadvantaged children in the Commonwealth. And the only reason why I wouldn't say transportation is because of the $8.4 billion that we invested in transportation over the next 4 years to create the new Orange Line cars and Red Line cars. I just don't think that that's sort of come to fruition yet, so it's not in people's eyes and in people's faces, but major investments have been made to transportation over the past few years.
My follow-up question is in regards to the state's economy, which has seen its share of growth over the past few years. Do you feel that the state should implement some initiatives to maintain steady growth, or just see where it goes?
I think we are instituting many reforms in order to make sure we continue to
see reforms or initiatives.
Initiatives, okay. In order to see prosperity. Most in particular is the investment that we've made in the local communities and local economies, and seeing the boom that we have here, where people are creating satellite offices from Boston down more into the South Shore and other areas, that we're seeing the $8.4 billion investment into our transportation system, which will have 32 new Orange Line cars and 34 new Red Line cars, making it a total of 152 Orange Line cars and 252 Red Line cars. By 2020, we're going to have that. These are all investments into making sure that the Massachusetts economy continues to roar. And also to go outside and have Jay Ash go to other countries and attract these other countries to have their businesses created here. I recently was in Jerusalem with a group, and we went to the Mass Challenge facility that they have there. And it's the amount of investment that Massachusetts is making into cybersecurity, which in my opinion, and as Steve talked about a little bit earlier, is going to be a huge market in the upcoming future. And that those things are going to continue to increase Massachusetts' economy.
I was going to ask a rhetorical question about those new cars showing up on time at their stations, but it's just a rhetorical question. Mr. Gill, same question.
Well, sorry. I don't think we need to spend money to take trips to Jerusalem to figure this one out, but one of the things we could do specific to the district, in the top five industries in Massachusetts, tourism is in the top five. And as far as the district is concerned, I would like to see the state do more with the joint committee on tourism that they have at the State House to do some initiatives. We got the Plymouth 400 coming up, and with the local meals tax that has been passed in every town of the district except Duxbury, if we can pump up the tourism industry specific to the district and have folks coming in here spending their tourism dollars, that's going to go towards, obviously people need to eat when they come to an area and stay in hotels and other things like that. That will put money directly into the coffers of the local towns in the district. Hopefully Duxbury will get on board and pass the additional 0.75% local sales tax on meals.
Katie, same question in regards to maintaining the growth of our economy. What initiatives do you feel the state should implement to keep that growth going?
There's so many problems, right? It's tough. The things that I focus on, I think, will help businesses, right? And that will help growth. So if we tackle the healthcare problem, because that is a major expense to businesses, right? If they want to provide healthcare for their employees, every year that keeps going up and up, and that's a really big burden on businesses. So if we help to fix that, you can decrease the burden, and that will have the businesses have more money to invest in the community, right? So the other thing is education, right? If we invest in education and we have a more educated workforce, then you can increase the businesses and workers around there. So the things that I am passionate about are the things that I talk to people about, I think, are ways that we can increase what our community is doing and businesses in our community.
Okay. Let's go to Jessica Trufant from the Patriot Ledger. Questions for the candidates here for the state Senate seat, the Plymouth and Norfolk district.
Sure. So charter schools have been a controversial topic in the state, and they continue to draw students and therefore funding away from public schools. So what, if anything, should the legislature do to address the shortfall created by charter schools? And also, should school districts or the state as a whole take anything away from the fact that some students are choosing to go to charter schools? Is that saying anything about the state of public education? So I don't know who to start with. Katie? It's my choice? Okay, Katie, right. Great.
It's great to be sure. Yeah. What was the question
okay,
again?
So charter schools, they're taking funding away from public schools. So should the legislature do anything about the funding shortfall? And also, is there anything about charter schools that you see public schools should adopt attributes of them that you know that are drawing students into them?
Yeah, no, I mean, so the concept of charter schools is great, right? Is the idea that they think about education and they try to do new and different things in education, and it's it can be very innovative, and I think you can use a lot of the ideas that they do to help improve the public school system. But I'm a firm believer in the public school system. I myself am the product of public schools. My kids go to public schools. I think when you start to have an increase in charter schools, it's because there's something wrong with the public schools that people are kind of jumping ship and trying to look for different alternatives for it. So it's not necessarily that charter schools are bad. It's just showing that there's some issue going on with the public schools, and that's what we need to strengthen, because public schools help everybody, and that's where we need to go. That's where most kids go. That is what we need to improve. That is where we need to put our funding.
Okay, same question. Let's go right down the line here. Let's go to Stephen Gill.
Well, just to correct maybe a misconception, charter schools are public schools, and I oppose them. I think that we should be putting our money into the traditional public schools as well as increased funding for the vo-tech schools. Not everybody needs to go to college. We need people in the trades, and the vo-tech system here in Massachusetts needs even more funding than it has been getting. With regard to funding, I know we just had a chance this past summer to the House and the Senate both adopted under Chapter 70 the formula for funding of public schools for the last 25 or more years. There was supposed to be a four-year review every year by the Foundation Budget Review Commission, and they never did it. They finally did it in 2015, and they recommended four changes to the formula. The Senate version of the bill was to adopt all four outright, and the House version of the bill was to adopt two of them and then do a study on the other two. I was disappointed to see, and Pat was on that committee with the senators in the joint committee, they could not come to a compromise to get the bill passed get the funding formula changed to help our kids.
Okay, let's go to Pat O'Connor.
Yeah, to answer the question in regards to what the legislature can do for public schools facing money shortfalls due to charter schools, I put forward two amendments to the budget the past 2 years to fully fund the reimbursement formula. The reimbursement formula as set was 100% for the first year of that child and then 25% for the following 4 years. That funding formula is not even close to being met. It's an absolute disgrace of what we're doing. And it's not really even a conversation about are you pro-charter school or anti-charter school. And I was no on to the question 2 years ago. I didn't support the expansion of charter schools. I think I was one of the only Republicans to take that stance. This is a question about fairness to our public schools. And right now, our public schools are not getting a fair share when it comes to this, because these monies that are supposed to go to them are not. And this is becoming a liability. And in Weymouth, Hull, and Scituate, all those three communities have liabilities as such that they're losing money out on local aid because so much money's going out to charter school reimbursement line item that we need to fix it. And we were able to secure some moderate increases this year to the charter school line item.
Let's say I'm a typical homeowner that lives in your district. I've got kids in the public schools. I've been in the community for 20 or 30 years. What difference is it going to make if I elect you to be my state senator, Stephen Gill?
I'm sorry. Could you say that one question one more time?
I'm a typical resident in your district, own a home, have kids in the schools, live, work, and play here on the South Shore. What difference will it make to me if I elect you as my state senator?
Well, if you're in this district and you are a registered Massachusetts voter, since we make up 55% of the registered voters in the state, chances are you are like me. And my interest is your interest. I'm interested as an independent of helping individual folks' agenda as opposed to the agenda of a political party, which may or may not be in the best interests of the individual voters here in the state. I would encourage folks to actually vote for me if they are interested in having their interests put ahead of the party's interests and the party's agendas.
Let me ask you a quick 30-second follow-up. If you're elected and you'd be in there as an independent, who would you caucus with, Republicans or Democrats?
I don't think that question can be answered as asked. I mean, you caucus around particular issues. If any given senator, regardless of their party, is on the same side of an issue as I am, and that issue hopefully is going to be in the best interests of the voters of the district, then I'm going to caucus with those individuals who fall on the same side of the issue as I would.
Okay. Thank you. Katie McBride, I live in your district. I'm a typical homeowner. I got kids in the schools. What difference is it going to make to me if you're elected to that seat?
I care about the very same issues that you care about. I live in the district. I work in the district. I talk to people constantly when we're out canvassing. I'm asking homeowners and renters and everybody who comes to the door, you know, what are your issues? What are you concerned about? And by and large, you know, maybe there's a little bias because there's a pediatrician standing in front of them, but it's really healthcare. We get onto other issues. You know, we talk about education, we talk about the environment, we talk about transportation, but that's the biggest issue and biggest concern, and that's what I see. And so if you elect me, we don't have any physicians in our state senate right now, and we don't necessarily have anyone with the experience that I have leading on this issue that is so critical for most people. And so I want to get in there and I want to start working on it because it's a big problem, but I'm ready to solve it.
Okay. Let's go to you, Pat O'Connor. Why should I vote to reelect you? What are you going to do for me?
You're going to get somebody who every single day wakes up loving this job and wanting to help people and fight for people on the South Shore. When I go to meetings and I talk to people all throughout the South Shore over the past 2.5 years, I take them with me to Beacon Hill and I take them with me all across this district, whether it be the mother whose son was abused in a group home or whether it be going into a room at Weymouth Town Hall and seeing families with pictures, 8x10s of their brothers and sisters and sons and daughters who've died in the opioid epidemic. I take all those stories with me and fight every single day for the best of their families, for the best of their neighborhoods, and for the best of their communities. And at the same time, I have the privilege and honor of working in a bipartisan fashion alongside Governor Baker to do the best we possibly can to continue to move Massachusetts forward.
Okay, thank you. Let's go now to Kevin Tachi. Actually, I didn't realize we were so close to the top of the hour. One quick lightning round question, then we're going to go to closing statements.
If I could just make a statement myself, you are not a typical homeowner. You are more than typical. You are not typical, that's for sure. Current bottle bill, keep it, needs to be modified, or eliminated. Pick one. Start with Mr. Gill.
Eliminate it.
Modified.
Katie, okay. Senator?
I'd say modified, too.
Lightning round question, Jessica Trufant.
Yes or no on question one, which is regarding nurse staffing mandates.
Let's start. Let's go right down the line. Katie McBride.
Yes.
Stephen Gill.
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Patrick O'Connor. Okay. Plymouth County government, stay or time to go? Pat O'Connor.
Stay.
Stay. Stephen Gill, stay or go?
Stay.
Stay. Katie McBride.
Stay.
Okay. Let's go to our final statements. Now, remember, these are 1 minute long. We are going to reverse the order. So we're going to start with Pat O'Connor, then we're going to go to Katie McBride, then we're going to go to Stephen Gill. Pat.
Thank you, Christine, Kevin, Jessica. Thank you to ATD. Thank you to listeners at home. It's an honor to serve you as your state senator. We've done a lot of great things since taking office 2.5 years ago. I want to continue to work with Governor Baker and my colleagues in a bipartisan fashion to advance our shared priorities of great schools for our children and affordable college, the best services and programming for our seniors, our veterans, and our intellectually and developmentally disabled, making healthcare more affordable, growing our economy, creating jobs, and making sure Massachusetts and the South Shore's best days are always ahead of us. I respectfully ask for your vote on November 6th to continue to work for you.
Thank you very much. That was Pat O'Connor. And now let's go to Katie McBride, your closing statement.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you for listening. I would like you to vote for me because I will bring a new set of skills and a more progressive set of ideas to the State House. As a physician, I care about you and your family. I will listen to your concerns and use scientific evidence to solve our problems. I will work for a more universal healthcare system. I will attack our opioid epidemic from all angles to help our families and communities. I will work towards high-quality, affordable education for all, from pre-K through college or trade school, and accessible, reliable, and affordable public transportation. I will continue to support our working families, promote gun safety, and defend the civil rights of all Massachusetts residents. I will use scientific evidence to protect our environment. I need you to vote for me, Katie McBride, and together we can write a prescription for change.
Thank you very much. That was Katie McBride. Now we're going to go to Stephen Gill, our independent candidate in the race for the Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat.
Thank you to everyone. It's been a great forum. I would ask, humbly ask you for your vote on November 6th this year. I'm Stephen Gill, and I am the independent candidate for State Senate. I will look out for your interests. I have no special interests or political parties' agendas that I have to put ahead of yours. The party system in this day and age seems to elect followers, not leaders. If you want your state senator to be a leader and not a follower of party agendas who will lead for you, please vote for me on November 6th.
Thank you very much. That was the independent candidate, Stephen Gill. You've been listening to a WATD political forum. The race is for the state Senate seat for the Plymouth Norfolk District. Pat O'Connor, the incumbent Republican. Stephen Gill, the independent. Katie McBride, the Democrat in this race. Joining me here, Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk, Jessica Trufant from the Patriot Ledger, Whitman Hanson, Community Access TV, Amy Leonard with those magical cards over there. Kevin, you want to add something?
And throwing our camera, our illustrious camera person, James Colley, who's done a nice job.
I know, and doesn't even crack a smile or wince. Ooh, he's perfect. It should be one of those British guards in front of the Buckingham Palace.
He might be.
Get out there on November 6th and vote. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.